Obsèques.
It's time to begin, let's say. No, okay. So I'll start. Basically, you got OPSECs, that's the topic of the talk. What is OPSEC? It's a security extension for HARP. Why do we need OPSEC? Because HARP has been widely deployed since long, since more or less 20 years, but is known to have security weakness. We will see further what kind of weakness and how to solve them. The solution of OPSEC is to authenticate each packet source. So an attacker configs the packet and so configs the result. The current status is in progress. The specification is not completely down on the code neither. Jerome Etienne, that's my name. So the talk will be split in several parts. First, what is HARP? The purpose of HARP, the basics, and the weaknesses. Basically, why do we need OPSEC? After that, we go through OPSEC, an overview of what the basic stuff of OPSEC. We go further to see the neighbor's discovery. We explain all this term later. The key exchange, the peer unreachability detection. Well, after the conclusion. All right, so let's see what is HARP. First, what's the hold? Has been specified in 82. In 82, the security was not a real matter. So they just designed the thing just to be sure that works without caring if there is an attacker or not. The specification is public. You can find it in RFC 826, easily on the internet. The main aim of HARP is to resolve an address from protocol one. I will just explain a bit after that. During this talk, I will use the term plain HARP to designate the current version of HARP, because just not to be confused with OPSEC and plain HARP. All right. That was is HARP. So now let's see what the aim of HARP, what's the basic of it. Basically, it got a box. This box was one to send a packet to another one. So the sender tried to send a packet to the target. But you got only the IP, the address IP of it. You don't have the Ethernet address. So at this point, the aim of HARP is to solve this from the IP address to get the Ethernet address. How do we achieve that? Simply, the sender broadcasts an app request on the network, so everybody receives it. The IP address owner will reply the answer to the sender. At this point, the sender knows the answer and caches it. So now the sender is aware of the Ethernet address compared to the IP address and can send on the network the Ethernet address with the MAC address, so the packet, the IP packet, go through the target. That's the aim of HARP. The problem is HARP is, as I said, is full of security holes. All the packets are unauthenticated, that is, it runs. So that means that that any attacker can send fake request or fake reply. If I send a request, an attacker can just send whatever result. I will accept it without being aware that comes from an attacker. All right, so unauthenticated packet. At this point, there is two rules in HARP which are inherently insecure, in fact. First, each time a host receives a packet, he updates its cache. That means that because the request at this point is broadcasted, everybody on the network will receive it. So if I'm an attacker and I want to change the app result, I just send a packet to everybody. Everybody will update this cache without any check of any kind. So I can do whatever you want with the result. I can do whatever I want. Another rule is the receiver, if the receiver of the packet is equal to the target, so basically if the packet I receive is for me, I create a cache entry for it. These two rules imply that an attacker can easily modify or create an entry in any host of the network and so reroute the traffic. That means that suppose I'm a host and I want to, I got connection with another one. An attacker can come, send two packets, or even one, and reroute all the traffic to a guy, and this guy will do whatever he wants with the traffic, so you can modify it, trade it, basically anything you want. So ARP is not exactly secure. Who is vulnerable to this attack? Basically, any protocol relying on ARP, mainly IP, in fact, because that's the main one using ARP. It's the only one I know, in fact. So IP can be used in two ways. Either you use insecure traffic, plain TCP. Most of the traffic is, in fact, not encrypted. So that's the main case. The traffic can be routed to an attacker. The attacker can do whatever he wants, can change your password, he can whatever you want. There's so many possibilities. It's impossible to list them and perform the main, well, what in security we call a man-in-the-middle attack. If in the lucky case you got a secure traffic, IPsec, SSL, SSH, all this kind of stuff, you're not yet fully safe because an attacker can intercept your data, so it can either slow down the connection or stop the connection. So even in case of IPsec, you're not safe. So now we have seen what is ARP on basically the purpose of ARPsec. And we explain so the design rule of ARPsec on why I've done it and what I try to achieve by ARPsec. First, because ARP is rather old, a lot of things rely on it. So ARPsec should be as close as possible as plain ARP. As generic as plain ARP, for example, ARP is not specified to Ethernet or IP, so you can do, in fact, a lot of, you can do IPX and FDDY if you want with ARP. And you should have exactly the same feature with plain ARP on ARPsec. We will see in the future that the second requirement is not achieved, in fact. There is some feature in plain ARP that I can do in ARPsec. Obviously, ARPsec must make that completely impossible to create, modify, or replay any ARPsec packet, because a security protocol must be secure, obviously. And one point is ARPsec should be able to gracefully interact with plain ARP. That means that during the development, you don't have to replace all your hosts with ARPsec. You can make them interact with plain ARP. It is allowed, the deployment of it. It's the same strategy used by IPv6. And a requirement not negligible, any host must not be, a host must not be able to claim a fake IP or a fake Ethernet address. So that's the aim. Let's see how ARPsec solves that. First, ARPsec has been split in two models. The first one, ARPKE, which is a key exchange. The role of that is first to negotiate the key. To negotiate the connection attribute. For example, when you got connection, you need some attribute, something like how many times you want to be connected, what kind of hash function you want to use, a bunch of parameters. We call that a connection attribute. Another thing done by ARPKE is the peer authentication. The peer authentication is the fact that I want to be sure that the guy in front of me is the one he claimed to be, or not an attacker claiming to be my friend. Once I'm sure that the other guy is the one he claimed to be, I just do a key calculation to encrypt all that, to authentify all that. All this part is done in user space in my implementation, because it is just, it's a better way to do it. After that, you got a smaller part, which is ARPRES, which is do the ARP resolution, the address resolution, which is basically an authenticated part of plain ARP. It provides more or less the same features than ARP, but authentify all the packet. This one is done in kernel space. All right. So OPSEC at this point is split in three parts. All the connections are split in three parts. The first one is the neighbor's discovery. Because I want to be able to interact smoothly with the, with plain app, I must first determine if the guy I want to talk to is able to support OPSEC or is not. So I call my neighbors, the other guy who support OPSEC and the other one who support only plain app are not my neighbors. All right. Well, that's, I know that the guy in front of me support OPSEC. I began what I call a key exchange. It's done by two cryptographic items. Authenticated Diffie-Hellman, which is some public key tools and some shared secret key. I will come back on that after that. So once I have done the neighbor's discovery and the key exchange, I call that a connection establishment. After these 2 points, the connection is established, and I do what we call address resolution on the cache update, basically what do ARP, but in a better way, in a more secure way, hopefully. All right, so we're seeing different points. All this is done by packet, and so these packets are authenticated. They are authenticated by shared secret key, and for that we use what we call a CAID hash, a CAID hash. Basically, what does that mean? That means that each packet, we take a hash function, we go through the packet with the hash function. After that, we go through a secret key owned by only me on the destination. And we put the result in the packet and send it to the other guy. The other guy do the exact same operation, and if he find the same result, that means that we got the same key. So that's the way we authenticated this packet. What kind of key are available in OPSEC? Three of them. The two first, the group key and the peer key, are used only during the connection establishment. We will come back later of the purpose of this key. Once the connection is established, we use another key, which is the session key. More in detail with this key. First, the group key, which is shared by all the neighbors. That means that everybody who supports OPSEC on the network got this key, the exact same for everybody. It is manually configured in each host. So because everybody got it, it's rather easy for an attacker to have it. You just have to crack one guy on the network and steal this key. So it's rather easy. We don't trust it. This one, because we don't trust it, we use it as few as possible. And as few as possible mean that when we can't use the peer key. The peer key are shared only by two peers. It's fixed across connection. That means that if you reboot or if you change your connection, if whatever happens, it will stay the same as long as your certificate are the same. Why? Because some cryptographic tools, basically, it's derived from the shared Diffie-Hellman secret. If you don't have the certificate cached, you use the group key because it's only if your certificate is not cached. Once you have established the connection, you use the session key. This one is used as well by two peers, but is derived from the shared Diffie-Hellman and that are specific to the connection, the cookies. Basically, that's the three key of it. Now we have seen that. We go through the neighbor's discovery. The neighbor's discovery is, as I said, basically made to authenticate, to discover the guy in front of you to know if you support OPSEC or not. We achieve that by a kind of magic packet we call the MAC plain app request. I'm going to come back later about what is a MAC plain app request. Okay, the neighbor's discovery exchange. Basically, that's we start to exchange packets, so we did some different stuff I'm going to detail. First, the role of the initiator and the responder. That each time you do an exchange, there is one guy who starts the exchange and one guy who responds to it. The guy who started is a responder, is the initiator, sorry, and the guy who responds is a responder. Because we do exchange of packets, you will have some stuff like packet loss. When you got a packet loss, you need to do retransmission. The initiator is the one who will do that. He will do that by the usual way. Basically, if I don't receive any acknowledgement, I just retransmit it after a timeout. After several retransmissions, I suppose that the connection is lost. That's the packet retransmission. Another stuff is I postpone the context creation in the responder. Why I do that? Because when I try to establish a connection, that will allocate what we'll call a context, basically a bunch of data, the retransmission timer, how many times I retransmit, all that information about the connection. If you do that in the responder, each time that use memory, and if you do that in the responder, anybody can create fake connection and use a lot of memory. This is what we call a denial of service. Somebody can, for example, I don't know, the thin fluid attack is basically that. You send a lot of data, you allocate memory. To prevent that, I postpone the context creation in the responder. I will explain later in that. Why I put the burden, in fact, in the initiator? Because the initiator is the one who chooses the time at which this connection will happen or not. A connection will happen. And the responder needs to be available at each time. Because the initiator has, a shorter time slice, it's simply much easier for him to be safe. That's the trick. Okay, so the exchange, the packet are rather simple. The initiator said a famous, the initiator, Mark Plain. The famous packet Mark Plain ARP request, and the guy in front of him hopefully say, okay, I support ARPSec. If he don't, he just reply as plain ARP.
What's the mark? What kind of mark do you have?
That's the next slide.
Oh, I see.
Okay, the mark request. Basically, the aim of the MAC request is to be recognizable by the ARPSec guy and to be ignored by a plain ARP. Basically, I'd send a packet and the guy will be able to answer, to recognize I'm a plain ARP. Unfortunately, ARP doesn't have any option field in which I can set a bit and say, okay, I support ARPSec. If you support ARPSec, as ARPSec, else ignore me. But because you don't have that, I haven't found any other solution that to put a clutch. Basically, the packet is made of four fields. These four fields, there is some combination which are impossible in reality. I use this combination because that's impossible in reality. The guy in front of me will get this packet, say, oh, this combination is impossible. That means that the guy in front of me is ARPSec. This impossible combination is here, that's my address. If I send the request, that's the sender address. So here, that's the target address. In the normal request, only this field, the sender on the target protocol one will be set. This one is indetermined. So in this one, I set mine. Obviously, the guy in front of me can't have my address because the address is by definition unique. So the guy in front of me will just note that and say, okay, that's marked to say you're an ARPSec guy. At this point, I know that the guy in front of me is an ARPSec. So I reply the ARPSec support, and the initiator is now aware that the guy in front of us support ARPSec and start the key exchange. The key exchange is basically four packets. The first one send a cookie E, to say the cookie of the initiator. After that, we reply some list of attributes, TTR spin attribute, my certificates, bunch of cookies. The other guy do the same stuff, but in the other sense. And after that, I sign a sign. I will detail all that. So the first exchange is a cookie. What is a cookie? A cookie is a specific to a connection. Each time I do a connection, it's different. And another requirement is only the sender is able to issue it. Nobody except that. So who has done it first? That come from Froteris. Froteris, I don't know how you pronounce it. It's done by Karn and Simpson, two guys. And all right. Why do I use that? I use that first not to create a connection with replay packet. Let's see more in detail that. Doesn't work? It does work. If the first packet, so cookie E, is unique, then this one in which I put cookie E is mandatory different each time I change cookie E. So if the first one is unique, this one is unique. So can't be replayed either. After that, I use it not to create a contact in the responder. That's a denial of service stuff I explained previously. And because this cookie is unique, I use that to randomize the session key. I compute the session key according to the data unique to the connection. So if the cookie is unique, the session key is unique, hopefully. How I achieve this problem? Basically, when I boot, I get a random number called secret. When I set the counter to zero, each time I issue a cookie, I increment this counter. This means that a cookie got a unique number and nobody can replay a cookie. So the basic formula is some cryptographic stuff, not really important now. What happened? All right. Okay, so that's a cookie. Once the first exchange is down, the responder will reply his certificate, a bunch of attributes, his cookie, and reply the other cookie. But the interesting part currently is the certificate. The sender replies certificate. At this point, the initiator puts its certificate. So after these two packets, all two got the certificate of the other. What is a certificate? Sometimes the computer needs to be sure that the data are true. But there is no notion of truth for a computer. So basically, we put the data, we sign that by what we call the trusted authority, and we consider that because the trusted authority has said this is true, because we trust this authority. All right, that's the principle of what we call PKI, public key infrastructure. But the problem of that is usually PKI is done by a hierarchy. Basically, you trust the guy just above you, and the guy above you trust another one, the guy above you, and so on. But the problem is that the trusted authority is when you receive a packet certified by a guy you don't know, you have to go through a whole hierarchy, and at this point, you find a link to say, all right, you got a packet, it's certified by this guy, this guy, this guy, and I trust the last guy, so that's okay, I trust you. But this hierarchy is impossible because of the nature of ARP. ARP happened before I can send any packet, any IP packet. So I can't go through all this hierarchy because this hierarchy, to reach all these people, need to send packet. So because of ARP, I can't use all this hierarchy. In fact, I have only one level of authority. This authority got a public key, and the public key is configured in each node manually. So what the certificate is, we know. Now, what kind of information we put in it? So some public information. So some the Diffie-Hellman secret and the Diffie-Hellman group. That's two cryptographic things. So the list of address, the list of hardware address, or the list of protocol address. Basically, if I got, I don't know, two Ethernet address, two Ethernet card, here I put my two Ethernet address. Only if I got, I don't know, three IP, I put my list of IP there. The fact to include that in the certificate is really important because this permits everybody to prevent an attacker from claim an illegal address. That's basically the point of AppSec. So once we got the certificate and we are sure that the guy in front of us is the one he claimed to be, we got some attributes, some connection attribute. We got that from policy, but okay. So here, I send the attribute. The guy here negotiates the attribute and send the one he likes. What kind of attribute do we have? For example, you got the time to live of the function, bunch of stuff, what kind of hash function, all that. The responder lists the proposition. On the initiator, replies his favorites. Basically, what I call the attribute negotiation at this point. He sends a list of proposition. The guy chooses the one he wants and reply it. The proposition language has been inspired from Ike. Ike is the key negotiation for IPsec. All right. Once we got that, we got the certificate of the other guy and the attribute. So we are able to build the connection. But we need to be sure that the certificate is okay and you got the information that we are agree on the key itself. To do that, we do what I call a sign. Basically, we compute the secret keys and do a keyed hash on that. That's the sign. If the keyed hash is the same, that means that we got both the same key. So we do that there. After these four packets, the key is established. The connection is established. Unfortunately, all these packets can be faked. Can be faked. Up to this one, all the packets can be faked. That means that anybody can read the packet and send packet, claim another authority, and we know that only at the end. Only when we do public key authentication, so something rather slow, we can do maybe, even with the hardware, we can do maybe 100 or 200 key authentication per second. So that's really slow. It's used as a denial of service. Basically, I send a lot of fake packet on you, use your CPU checking it, and that's not true. So that's a denial of service. The only way to solve, more or less solve, to prevent this attack, to reduce this attack, is a rate limiter. Basically, is when I receive a lot of false information, I just reduce the rate at which I do it. The rate limiter I use is inspired from BGP root opening. BGP is a routing protocol. All right. So I reduce that. I reduce the denial of service based on CPU consumption. For that, I use a variable and five tunable value. So this value. Up. The algorithm is the following. First, at each operation, so in this case, each time I compute something heavy, some public key things, I increase this penalty by operation cost. So we got more or less a cost which increase with time, so the cooldown period, we decrease it. It's more or less, consider that as a temperature stuff. Each time you do an operation, your engine just become warmer, 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 and after when you don't use it, it just decreases. When you go up to a given point called the high threshold, you start to ignore the new operation. Suppose your engine is just too hot to work. And when your penalty just cool down below a given point, you start to perform new operation. This algorithm has an interesting advantage is allow burst. That means that even if there is no attacker, I will be able to support for example, I don't know, 100 people try to connect me at the same time. There is no attacker, simply 100 people, because after a power failure, when the power comes back, they all try to connect me. These things with allo burst. But of all the two frequent switching, if I have done more simpler stuff, I can just go ignore, perform, whereas let's do a flipping, which is not good for the performance. This algorithm is good for that. All right, so now we understand more or less how AppSec work, how the key exchange is down. But the problem is, once you have done the connection, suppose the other guy, the guy in front of you, just fall because of the power failure, because of a crash, for an unknown reason. You have to be aware of it for two reasons. First, to notify the upper layer that the peer is now unreachable. Suppose you are connected to another one, you will just be freezed if you not notify that the other one is fall down. So that's the role of ARP to do it. Another reason is, if the other guy fall down and just come back, you think that the previous connection is still on, you're just unable to connect it. So that's two reasons in which it's important to do it. How to do it? We can just do what do plain ARP, that means to wait for the cache entry expiration. After a timeout, if the cache is unable to renew itself, it just expires. The problem is, it's a timeout technology, so you have to wait time. Something like, by default, is some 15 minutes, but Linux do that a lot faster. I don't remember, maybe 1 minute. So I use two optional stuff to do that faster. First, the termination token, which is not the timeout, so it's faster when the other guy come back. And I use another timeout technology, but I use multicast to reduce the traffic. I'll explain that as I said. What is a termination token? It's a special packet which is stored as a connection establishment. This packet got a meaning, let's say, when I receive it, that means that my connection is over, like a reset in TCP. So when I receive it, it's over. The problem is, I have to store that in a non-volatile memory, because it needs to be authenticated by the previous key. The advantage of that is, when I connect the other guy, it's not a timeout technology. As soon as I send another packet to the other guy, he will reply this packet. So there is no timeout. That can be 1 second after he comes back. I don't have to wait 1 minute or more. But if the other guy don't come back, it's not enough. The other guy will not reply this packet because it's not on. So we need a timeout technology as well. For that, I use another odd-bit technology, which is based on multicast. Why I done that on multicast? Because in unicast, the complexity of it, the number of packets you send, is have a complexity of n or n square for n host. In multicast, you got only n, whatever the case. So there can be much less packet. The beauty of it is the authentication of the integrity via hash chain. But with some special case, it's possible to do the integrity with hash chain. It will be in the paper. It's a bit complex to be explained there, but that's the beauty of it. All right. So now you get the hard bit. One difference between the plain AppSec and plain ARP is, because of all the big number I use with the public key cryptography, my packet will be much bigger than the ARP one. ARP packet, usually for IP on Ethernet, is 28 bytes long. That's really small. So they don't include any fragmentation. Mine can be much bigger, something like 1K. So sometimes 1K is not able to be transferred without fragmentation. Even if IP6 suppose 1,280 bytes. But some old technologies such as AX25 or Netrom have much slower much lower one. How to do the fragmentation in a secure manner? Because mine is, in fact, OPSEC 1 is very close to IPv4 fragmentation. That means that I choose them and use some TTL to discard the whole packet. But IPv4 fragmentation got some security hole. Is basically, the fragmentation is done after the authentication. That means that an attacker can send fake fragment just to discard the packet in the queue or the fragmentation. So in my case, the fragmentation is done before the authentication. So I avoid some denial of service at this point. One of the features OPSEC is unable to emulate is the gratuitous ARP. What is a gratuitous ARP? Basically, it's an ARP request asking for its own address. That means I send a request, for example, my IP is 10.1.1.1, and I send a packet asking for somebody with the same address. That seems strange, but it got two purposes. First, the detection of the address duplication. An IP is supposed to be unique, at least on the LAN, with NAT is number true, but okay, it's supposed to be unique. A second thing is that updates the plain ARP cache. In address takeover, suppose you got one host, this host crash because it crashed for whatever reason. Another one wants to take care of the address for high availability. It will send a gratuitous ARP to update the cache of everybody. The problem is the fact that anybody can send a packet to update the cache of anybody is not exactly secure. So OPSEC can easily do the address duplication in the exact same way, but in some cases can't do this update of the plain ARP cache because it's inherently insecure. Unfortunately, some people rely on it. And so in this case, OPSEC got problem. So you got some complex condition. All right. When I speak about OPSEC to people, a lot of them find them not really useful, so I add some special stuff about usefulness of OPSEC. When I talk to people, some think that because it's secure, something is local on your network, it's secure. You can assume that, but some don't. For example, you got some protocols such as OSPF, RIP, or VRPP, VRRP, which secures their local network, local traffic. Another attack I suggest is the local attacker need to be local, so it's easy to track down. Even if we assume it's true, it happens only when the damage is done, so when we know there is an attacker, he has done its attack. OPSEC prevents some attacks from happening, so we don't need that. It improves this case as well. A more relevant, according to me, attack is OPSEC is not end-to-end. That means that when I try to send a packet to a guy very far, I don't know, Europe, OPSEC is okay only up to the next router. And after that, the next router need to do OPSEC as well and so on. So if there is at least one link on the path from B to Europe which doesn't support OPSEC, and the attacker is able to attack this link, OPSEC becomes useless on the world path. We can ask, obviously, how frequent are the local attack compared to the global attack? Because recursively, in fact, OPSEC is on turn, recursively. All right, but okay. For end-to-end problem, I advise to use, obviously, IPsec or SSL or SSH or these kind of things, which are end-to-end security. OPSEC doesn't intend to replace these kind of things. It intends to complete them. As I explained before, OPSEC, in fact, solves some problem of IP IPsec processor or all these kind of things. So it completes them or not replaces them. Because any protocol using ARP is vulnerable to this attack. Unco can be a bit safer with OPSEC. What kind of future work? First, obviously, to complete the code on the specification, not a small one. To list all the compatibility, for example, the gratuitous ARP. It's possible that because I haven't deployed that, I may not know some stuff that may cause incompatibility. All right, so another thing that I wanted to do is to do ARP key for an authentication, no more using public key because it's rather heavy in computation, but to use secret key like Kerberos. That's a good way to pronounce it. But that got some problems, that Kerberos is accused of a server. This server became a single port of failure. That means that if it crashed because power failure, or if the guy corrupted, everybody is corrupted. Usually, to solve this problem, we duplicate the server for reliability. The problem is if you duplicate the server, you duplicate the key, so you reduce the security. Another point was to secure some marginal variation of ARP, which is RARP on eARP. Another thing which is not noted there is I wanted to do that for for dynamic address and diskless machine, because basically currently you need a disk to store the root key of the authority. Future work. So what this talk has shown is the security of ARP is weak. OPSEC hopefully guarantee the cache content. So in some cases that help. But the problem is, because it's not yet fully specified, it's not yet reviewed. So you get two possible problems there is I may, in fact it's probable, miss stuff in the network stuff, something like to miss some device I want to emulate. But more importantly is when you got security that reviewed, it's not really trustable. So once I have fully specified, I will publish all that. Hopefully good people will say that's correct or not. Hopefully. I hope it's correct. Okay, it's over. Any question?
Okay, so you have a mic there?
No, I got mine.
So, although you said in two of your slides, the usefulness was that, I do claim that if it's local, security problem is less of concern, right? The
All
complexity
right.
of your protocol probably does not justify it. Because this is a local problem, it's much more easily trackable than a global one. Could you have done it maybe simply by using, first of all, you avoid the handshake protocol.
The what?
The handshake protocol. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Because you're using MD5 signatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So could you have done it the same way OSPF does? You configure each machine.
Okay, OSPF.
Shared secret.
Okay, OSPF, how OSPF does it is basically each router got a secret key. But the point is they all have the same key. Each router in OSPF got the same key. So I can't authenticate it, the guy in front of me. I just say, no, all right, this guy is an OSPF router configured by my administrator. But I can't say this is this OSPF router and this other one, because everybody got the same key. That's what I call the group key in mine. Let me be back. All right, this one. OSPF do only the group key. That means that everybody got this key. I can't know if the guy in front of me, suppose you got 200 nodes. I just have to subvert one node, and I got this group key. So the attacker just have to subvert one guy.
Same thing with OSPF, right? You just have to subvert one router, and you compromise the whole network.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, that's true. but I don't like that. So basically, the difference is you got, okay, who do OSPF and who do ARP? A lot more people do ARP because everybody do ARP. So suppose I got, I don't know, 100 students, they all have the group. And if I got two routers, that means that the student got the same keys and the routers. That means that, so just an example to say that some untrusted people on the network may have this key. Even if you trust everybody, you got some case in which it's easy. For example, you got some, it's much easier to crack any computer on the network than just to crack a router. Anybody, you're not supposed to connect to a network, to a router if you're not an administrator. That means that's much harder to crack a router than you, any host. You understand?
I still fail to see the point in a sense that this system would work really well if every hub would have an ARPSec enabled systems. Mm-hmm. However, assuming that I'm a system administrator and I will go and deploy ARPSec locally, I go and put it on my router, assuming I can go and recompile the firmware on my Cisco. And I put it on all of my nodes. And then someone else comes from a hop away who doesn't support ARPSec, and he goes and continues attacking my systems the same way as he would have attacked it yesterday. What's really the point? I'm really not much less concerned with physical security.
With physical security, what do you mean?
Physical access to my local network. Mm-hmm. I'm much less concerned with someone actually coming in as laptop, computer, etc., and plugging in. Mm-hmm. Then I'm concerned with a remote attack. And
all that is for a local attack.
What you're saying is all fine and good. Maybe if you're doing a lot of IP/IP tunnels.
I don't see the relation with IP/IP there.
Well, if you're doing IP/IP tunnel, what happens is that both ends of a tunnel end up on the same network. In which case, in which case, you probably can do a remote attack doing through the tunnel. Mm-hmm. But other than that,
but basically, what you say is you assume that because it's local, it's safe. Some don't do that. Some people don't do that.
So that's exactly my point. If it's local, it's secure.
Yeah.
Just need a simple secret.
If you assume it's secure, you have not. Nobody need any key. If it's secure, that's secure.
What happens if someone does let's say you set up your web server, like the Apache people accidentally set their server up, when it got cracked, and I'm sure you heard about that, but someone came in and they had access to they got a root shell to the whole system over the internet. Mm-hmm.
All right.
So let's say that someone gets root access on one of your nodes from the internet. Mm-hmm. They have access, they have their root on one of the nodes in your system.
Yeah.
Can they support your network?
Not the whole network. That's the point of all that. Basically, if you do that, if the attacker got that, he got the group key. So he can send whatever with the group key. That's my point about what Jamal said about the OSPF things. He got the group key, so he's able to send requests to the other host. And he's able to fake the result, but he's not even able to fake its result. Thanks to that, you're not, even if you're no more allowed to claim an IP you don't have. That means that you can't reply to ARP if you, suppose I subvert a web server, and there is other server, mail server. I can't reply on behalf of the web server, or on behalf of the mail server, thanks to that. Because I authenticated your web server, and I can distinguish it from the mail server. So thanks to that, in fact, that makes this attack impossible. In fact, that's the whole point. Am I clear? Not really. On one node.
All they can do is subvert that node.
Yeah.
They can't go and they can't make all the other servers' IP addresses point to their node and corrupt your whole system.
Yeah, but that protects you only against the app attack. I don't say, okay, you can't do anything on the, well, there is many all, obviously. But yes, for apps, that's true.
So you said you can have a mixture of both app and RSA.
Yeah.
So what happens? So someone who is just using plain app can still attack. Right?
Yeah, obviously. All the host who don't support AppSec are not protected by AppSec. That means that if you don't support AppSec, you still have all the of the whole of plain app, of the normal app.
So in that case, if I follow the Apache website example, someone connects to my site, remotely compromises the system, I'm using AppSec. All he has to do to repeat the attack is shut down AppSec on that specific system, bring up potentially a different virtual interface with a different IP address, and go and reroute everything back to it?
No, because the certificate, there. The certificate include the address you are allowed to claim. So if you change your interface address, you can do it.
MAC addresses are programmable on most modern NICs.
Yeah, no problem. But the problem is not there. Is I will send a request on ARP. The guy will answer. If it's changed his IP address or his address, the answer will not be acceptable. Because
okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially what the information that ARP packet contains is IP address and MAC address.
Yeah.
The host and both systems, assuming ideal circumstances. Now, here I am compromising a remote system,
mm-hmm.
bringing up a virtual interface, shutting down ARPSec totally.
Okay.
Bringing up a virtual interface with an IP address that was not in use but was a spare IP address.
Mm-hmm.
And reprogramming MAC on the NIC to be a different MAC address.
All right.
As a result, that MAC address is not an ARPSec cache on any of the other systems. And here I am, what prevents me right now from rerouting everything to that IP address?
Okay, who will connect you? When somebody will come to connect you,
okay.
If this guy is plain app, you're right, because it's plain app, so it's no more AppSec. If it's AppSec, he will ask you the answer. You will come and say, all right, I tried to give you the answer. I give you the certificate, but the certificate contains this information. If you give me information you're not allowed to claim, I will just refuse. Because of the certificate got some
signature. But you're saying that after a certain period of time, the ARP cache in an ARPSec system expires.
Yeah.
What prevents me from reclaiming it then?
In this case, that means there is policy. Okay, suppose... There. You're there, you're the subverted one. And I'm there, the nice one who just want to connect you. I send that.
Yes.
At this point, you're subverted, so you say...
I'm just sending a standard ARP request back.
You don't do that. So at this point, there is what I call... I skip this part because it's rather complex to explain, but you got a bunch of policies there, which is you got three policies. Either you support the reply only in plain ARP, either you support only AppSec, either you support both.
Okay.
Both, that means that you support... And at this point, you got some complex stuff to know. If the guy already replied in AppSec, I store it. I say, okay, because he replied already in AppSec, I assume it's AppSec. Now, if you reply, because you already replied in AppSec, if you reply now in plain app, I will no more accept it.
Uh-huh. In that case, I can see a number of legitimate problems with that setup, considering a system. Operating system on a system can change through a legitimate process, and ARPSec can be removed and ARP can be enabled on it instead.
If it's removed on purpose, that means that at a given point you will come and say, okay, now I'm no more do ARP. So at this point you got some uninstallation. Basically, it's to advertise a certificate which say, no, all the other certificates are over, on just discard any information you got on me. But yes, it's a weakness. All that is documented on a paper.
Okay.
unfortunately not large published.
It seems if you want perfect security, that what you do is you just say that you only require ARPSec.
Yeah, if you.
Authentication for all the ARP.
Yeah.
Sorts of things. So you require ARPSec, so the system that has 20 ARP is able to connect to your network.
Yeah, so if you require that. The problem. Yeah, but the problem is some people don't want that because to do that requires that the other guy support ARP. So you have to manually configure, okay, these people support ARP, ARPSec or ARP, because you have to configure, that's a problem. So that's why I support three policy to leave the latency to the guy who will choose. Either he chooses your stuff, which is, I want to guarantee that's okay, so I say everybody support ARPSec and I don't accept any plain ARP receiver answer. So in this case, you got quite you benefited from the ARPSec security. And that's other question? Yeah, ask. Louder, please.
The network discovery protocol already exchanges the lists of hardware and protocol addresses of two hosts. So why do they need to do any ARP request later?
Because, what do you say exactly?
In the certificate.
The set. Okay, the certificate, the problem is you got a, I think I understood. Basically, you say that all that need, why I don't send only the certificate and do all that?
No. In the certificate, you do the list of hardware addresses and protocol addresses.
All right. Okay.
So now they have all the ARP information they will need ever about the other host.
All right. Okay. Well, I need to do that because the certificate in itself doesn't mean anything. It's just a bunch of data. It's certificates.
No.
Yeah. Let me explain. All that, it includes the addresses, but all that is just a bunch of data. Anybody on the network can read that, put that in a packet, and send that to me. That doesn't mean anything. That's just a bunch of data. Anybody can do whatever with. The key here is the GX mod N. Because I publish only GX mod N and not X, well, the problem is for that I need to explain Diffie-Hellman. Okay, basically it's, I publish only GX mod N, and I'm the only one to know X. And X is required to produce sign at this point. This guarantee I got the X. That means that this guarantees that the key, the guy who sent that, is the one who owns really X. Not because that can be combined by anybody. Can be.
The question is, after I get all the key exchange,
yeah, all that established, and after that, yes. Because you can have a bunch of stuff. You don't have to reply by a single address. Basically, after that, you got all this. Why I need other stuff? Because after that, I use single connection to, if you got several Ethernet address on the same LAN, I use a single connection. So after that, I need some ARPSec, some ARPRES request. I skip this part because it's not really interesting. But I need some ARPRES, but some other packet. The difference with ARP is ARP need to be done a lot because of the timeout stuff. Because this is connected, you got a state. In fact, there is a lot of packet at the beginning, but you no more need to do other packet after that.
Okay,
I answer your question. If you got only one, but in fact, if you got only one, you still need to do all that.
Yes, I need to do that, but I wouldn't do anything with any resolution after.
Yeah, if you got only one, yeah. But the problem is I need to support if you got several. What do you mean? That means that...
In the list of addresses, I would want to include only addresses relevant to that...
This include... Well, in the certificate, you can... Tick, tick, you can put here only the addresses of the LAN you are on. You don't need to have a single certificate for the box. Okay? Yeah?
If I have a server that speaks to my specific OPSEC, explode.
Yeah, okay. Crash, okay.
Plug a new one in.
Okay.
It speaks OPSEC as well.
Okay.
Well, it will take over, even though the other one can shut down correctly.
Yeah, because the authentication is not done by the IP. The new one will have a different MAC address, all right? Because it got a different MAC address and it's identified. All the OPSEC certificate are authenticated by the hardware address. The new server will have a different MAC address. So all that will take over. Okay? Other question?
What advantage does RFSEC have over just having static entries to our connection all the way to the network?
Can you repeat the end, please?
What advantage does RFSEC have over just having a whole bunch of static entries in our connection?
Okay, suppose I configure everybody with a static cache. Obviously, in this case, you're not vulnerable to all the attack I have. But the problem is, it's I change one guy, I have to update everybody. In this case, if I change one guy, I have to change this guy, and that's it. Because all that is dynamic. Basically, the aim of all that is to do the static entry, but dynamically. All right? Other question? No? Sure? Okay. That's it. All right.